I read somewhere that most people are lucky if they have one close, intimate friend in their lifetime. Many of us have more than our share of acquaintances, but statistics tell us that few of us develop that kind of relationship Dionne Warwick sung about. Knowing you can always count on me for good times and bad times, I'll be on your side forevermore. That's what friends are for. Yes, it seems everyone wants a friend, but few people actually have real, lasting friendships. Even with all the social networking like Facebook and texting, you name it, it seems we are becoming an increasingly private society, and it seems that fewer people than ever actually have lifelong, intimate friends anymore. Well, this morning we continue our series about the life of David, the shepherd king, and we reflect upon one of those special friendships which are so hard to establish and maintain, that between David and one of King Saul's sons, Jonathan. Let's look at that relationship and see what we might learn about friendship, about being a friend. Jonathan is first introduced in the Bible back in 1 Samuel 13. His father, Saul, has just been anointed king, has just become king. And King Saul and Jonathan joined together in leading Israel in skirmishes and battles with the Philistines and other neighboring tribes. And Jonathan proves himself to be a cunning and valiant warrior. At this point, early in Saul's kingship, there is no hint of the troubles to come, but that would quickly change. As you are aware, David is anointed by Samuel to be the future king of Israel, and though he doesn't immediately assume the kingship, we know it's eventually going to happen. And then David defeats Goliath in battle, becoming a national hero, winning the favor not only of the people of Israel, but also of King Saul, and at least two of King Saul's children, son Jonathan and daughter Michal, whom David ends up marrying. David becomes a member of the king's court as a warrior and a musician, and develops an incredibly close friendship with Jonathan. 1 Samuel 18 shares, by the time David had finished reporting to Saul, that is about who he was in the aftermath of killing Goliath, Jonathan was deeply impressed with David. An immediate bond was forged between them. He became totally committed to David. From that point on, he would be David's number one advocate and friend. Saul received David into his household that day, no more to return to the home of his father. Jonathan, out of his deep love for David, made a covenant with him. He formalized it with solemn gifts, his own royal robe and weapons, armor, sword, bow, and belt. David and Jonathan became lifelong friends. However, as the relationship between David and Jonathan strengthens, the relationship between King Saul and David deteriorates. Saul becomes insanely jealous of David, and on more than one occasion tries to kill David. Jonathan, however, intervenes with his father on behalf of his friend. Saul called his son Jonathan together with his servants and ordered them to kill David. But because Jonathan treasured David, he went and warned him, "My father is looking for a way to kill you. Here's what you're to do. Tomorrow morning, hide and stay hidden. I'll go out with my father into the field where you are hiding. I'll talk about you with my father and we'll see what he says. Then I'll report back to you." Jonathan brought up David with his father, speaking well of him. "Please," he said to his father, don't attack David. He hasn't wronged you, has he? And just look at all the good he has done. He put his life on the line when he killed the Philistine. What a great victory God gave Israel that day. You were there. You saw it with your own eyes. You were on your feet applauding. So why would you even think of sinning against an innocent person, killing David for no reason whatsoever? Saul listened to Jonathan and said, "You're right. As God lives, David lives. He will not be killed." So Jonathan sent for David and reported to him everything that was said. Then he brought David back to Saul, and everything was as it was before. Jonathan defends David before his father so that David is able to return to the court and be in King Saul's presence. But those of you who know the story know that that doesn't last long. King Saul's state of mind continues to deteriorate, and he once again seeks an opportunity to either have David killed or kill him himself. And then in chapter 20, Jonathan's friendship with David results in King Saul attempting to kill even his own son, Jonathan. That chapter is too long to read, so I will just kind of paraphrase the story. Saul has once again tried to kill David, but David, with the help of his wife Michal, escapes. He meets up with Jonathan. "What do I do now? What have I done to your father that makes him want to kill me?" "Nothing," says Jonathan. "You've done nothing wrong, and you're not going to die. Listen, my father tells me everything. He wouldn't go behind my back and kill you. It can't be." But David says, "Your father knows that we are the best of friends. That's why he's keeping it from you, because he's scared. If you do know, you'll side with me. But believe me, he's determined to kill me." So Jonathan says, "Tell me what you have in mind. I'll do anything for you." So David says, "Tomorrow I'm scheduled to eat dinner with the king, as is David's custom. Instead, I'll go out in the field until the evening and hide in the field until the evening of the third day. If your father misses me, tell him that I had to run down to Bethlehem," David's hometown, "to deal with some family matters. And if he says good, then I'm safe. But if he gets angry, you'll know he's made up his mind to kill me. You've got to believe me. You've entered into a covenant with me, remember? We're blood brothers. If I'm in the wrong, go ahead and kill me yourself." "I'd never do that," says Jonathan. "Now, if I get the slightest hint that my father is intent on killing you, you'll be the first to know." So Jonathan promises to find out what his father is up to and says to David, "If I make it through this alive, continue to be my blood brother. And if I die, keep the covenant friendship with my family forever. Stay loyal to me." Jonathan then repeats his pledge of love and friendship for David. And the text says, Jonathan loved David more than his own soul. So Jonathan lays out his plan for how David is to know if Saul wants him dead. "On the third day, when they've quit expecting you for dinner, come to the place where you hid before and wait beside that big boulder. I'll shoot 3 arrows in the direction of the boulder." You remember this story from Bible school or Sunday school? "Then I'll send one of my servants. Go and find the arrows. If I yell after the servant, 'The arrows are on this side, retrieve them,' that's the signal that you can return safely. But if I yell, 'The arrows are farther out,' then run for it. You're in trouble." So that's what happened. David hides in the field. He's missed at dinner. Saul at first ignores it, but then finally asks Jonathan, "Where's David?" Jonathan tells him he has family business to attend to in Bethlehem. And Saul then explodes in anger at Jonathan. "You son of a... Don't you think I know you're in cahoots with David? And don't you know that as long as he's around, you'll never be king? Go get him. Bring him here. From this moment, he's as good as dead." And Jonathan defends David, upon which Saul throws his spear at Jonathan, trying to kill him. Jonathan storms from the table, furiously angry, upset for David and smarting under the humiliation from his father. Of course, the next morning he goes to the field for the appointment with David and, of course, yells out after the arrows have been shot, "Isn't the arrow farther out?" Indicating to David the reality of Saul's desire to have him killed. David gets up from the boulder, his hiding place, sees Jonathan, and falls face down on the ground, prostrating himself 3 times before Jonathan. They then embrace and weep friend to friend, with the text saying, David wept especially hard. pretty dramatic, huh? In good times and bad times, I'll be at your side forevermore. That's what friends are for. What happens to Jonathan? Later on, a few chapters later, he is killed in battle with his brothers and father fighting against the Philistines. Through it all, he remains loyal to his covenant with David, a covenant David honors sometime later, as we'll shortly see. If you're hungering for a friend or for deeper intimacy in a relationship that you already have, then there's a lot that you can learn from the story of David and Jonathan. We learn from David and Jonathan that a true friend is willing to sacrifice. Look at the sacrifice Jonathan made for his friend David in our story today. We're told that he stripped himself of the robe he was wearing and gave it to David along with his armor, his sword, his bow, and his belt. Jonathan's actions were a lot more than just a generous personal gesture. The robe symbolizes the kingdom. Jonathan was the potential heir to his father's throne, but now we see him sacrificing his future for David. He literally gives David his place as king. Sacrifice is the ultimate example of intimate friendship. True friendship means a willingness to sacrifice for each other. It's the ability to put another's desires, needs, and wishes above those of our own. And of course, ultimately, it's what Jesus showed when he laid down his life for us. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for a friend. Sacrifice is the ultimate example of intimate friendship. We learn from David and Jonathan that true friends defend one another, not blindly, but honestly. We're told that Jonathan went to his father and spoke well of David. He stood up to his dad and said, "Dad, you're wrong about David." In fact, not only did he defend his friend, but he also rebuked his father for his attitude towards David. He says, don't sin against David. He hasn't done anything wrong to you. In fact, he's done everything to help you. Don't you remember? He risked his life fighting Goliath. And when he won, you were happy. Why are you going to kill him when he's innocent? A true friend, you see, won't talk around about you when you're not around. If they have an issue with you, they'll tell you about it, not others. True friends stick up for each other and defend each other when others attack. Perhaps some of you have seen the statue of Jackie Robinson and Pee Wee Reese over at the Brooklyn Cyclones Park in Coney Island. In fact, I think it was defaced a couple of weeks ago. And this statue stands as an example of friendship in the midst of attack. And the story is told that in his first seasons with the Brooklyn Dodgers, Jackie Robinson, the first black man to play Major League Baseball, faced hatred nearly everywhere. Fastballs at his head, spikings on the bases, brutal nicknames from the opposing dugouts and from the crowds. During one game in Boston, or so it's told, the taunts and racial slurs seemed to reach a peak. In the midst of this, another Dodger, a southern white man named Pee Wee Reese, called timeout. He walked from his position at shortstop towards Robinson at second base, put his own arm around Robinson's shoulder, and stood there with him for what seemed like an eternity. The gesture spoke more eloquently than the words. "This man is my friend." True friends stand with each other in adversity. We learn from David and Jonathan that true friends can be vulnerable with each other. They can be themselves with each other without fear of ridicule or judgment or belittlement. Remember when the truth hit Jonathan and David like a bullet that Jonathan's father was out to kill David? They weep together. When your heart is broken, you can bleed all over a friend and they'll bleed with you. And you don't have to worry if they think you're weak or if they're going to tell others about what's happened. We learn from David and Jonathan that true friends encourage each other. Even when David is depressed about Saul, Jonathan encourages him. Think of that. Jonathan's dad is after David. They're out in the wilderness looking for him, and the hitman's own son goes out and finds his friend and encourages him. That's the kind of friend to have, to be. He sees David at the lowest moment of his life, frightened and stumbling through the wilderness, and he brings him encouragement. Two friends bring encouragement, not negativity. Well, I don't know about you, but when I look at the kind of friendship that David has with Jonathan, it makes me long for that same intimacy in my own friendship. I mean, how many of us can actually say that we have a friend like that? Or how many of us can say that we are a friend like that? Remember that song by Neil Young, A Man Needs a Maid? There's that line in it, to live a love, you've got to give a love. He could have just as easily written, to have a friend, you've got to be a friend. You want to have a friendship like David and Jonathan? First of all, you've got to be a friend. How do you measure up as a friend? How do you rate on the Jonathan-David friendship meter? From Jonathan and David, we learn that true friends sacrifice for each other. True friends stand up for one another. True friends can be vulnerable with one another without fear of reprisal. True friends encourage one another. For good times and bad times, I'll be on your side forevermore. That's what friends are for. Want to hear the kind of friend David was to Jonathan even after Jonathan dies? Go read 2 Samuel chapter 9. 2 Samuel chapter 9. That's what friends are for. Amen.